Welcome to Live, Let, Thrive, a podcast about the Airbnb life, the share economy, and everything in between. Here are your hosts, Micah and Steve.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Live, Let, Thrive, or as Micah says, another exciting episode of Live, Let, Thrive. Woo! And we're coming at you from just Fort Worth, Texas this time, because Micah couldn't join us. So I have a replacement for Micah right now, a miss, you might have heard of her, Julie George. Who's Julie George? She's the million-dollar host, of course, you know. I would say multi-million, but she put million, you know. Yeah, she'll hit that B pretty soon, you know what I'm saying? And so, so Julie George is this crazy Australian lady who started an Airbnb business a few years back and, you know, started making, brought it up to making over $1 million in the first year. And she's telling people how they can do it as well. And she sold her business for a buttload of money, which she can't disclose, but a buttload, just say a buttload. And so, yeah, not only did she build an awesome business, she built it to that, built it to sell and was able to sell it. And now she just travels the world getting into all kinds of mischief. Welcome to the show, Julie George.
Well, g'day, g'day. And finally, we've kicked Micah out and I'm in. I knew the day would come, Steve, and I feel like I've made it now that I'm co-hosting this show with you.
Yeah, pretty soon you'll be the host and I'll be co-host and then I'll just be pushed out.
And then it'll be like, who are those guys that used to do this show? I don't know.
It's the Julie George Show.
Hello. So, Steve, I'm coming to you from London today. So I have been traveling quite a bit since I saw you last, but I'm in London right now, Chelsea of all places. And right after this interview, I get to go to the fancy Ivy restaurant. So I'll have to behave myself, but I am having a sneaky, well, there's a wine glass. I can't tell you what's in the glass, but there is a bottle of wine. Have you got a drink there as well?
Well, see, before the show, Julie said, yesterday we talked about what we're going to do. And she said, oh, we'll have some wine in the show. Oh, great idea. And so I already opened my bottle, let it breathe a little before we started the podcast. And that she's saying, all they've got here is red wine. I don't drink red wine. I drink white wine. White wine. So know this, everybody listening to this show. Julie likes white wine and she loves New Zealand white wine. So anyways, if you're going to have her over, which is I'd suggest she's a fun gal, have it stocked plenty of white wine. She drinks about 2 or 3 bottles a day. So just have plenty of white wine on hand. And I can't open a bottle without pouring some. So I'm going to pour me a glass of this Southeast Australian wine.
Yay. You know? I'll sniff it.
Swirl it.
Do the wine tasting properly.
And then drink from the bottle, right? Okay.
And it's 11 a.m. where you are. I just need to remind you. But and he's holding up the 19 crimes bottle because all of the Australians are criminals. Those of you who didn't do history at school, we were convicts sent out from England. I keep being reminded that every day that I'm in the UK now. So anyway, it's but very pleased to see that you know me well enough to know what wine I drink and that we're celebrating with Aussie wine today.
Salut, slanchi, or how do y'all say
Salut.
It? How do y'all say it? Y'all just say cheers, or what do y'all say in Australia?
Down the hatch.
Another, please. So I guess, you know, so I alluded to it before the podcast. I guess the first line of questioning, she's asking, what are we going to talk about on the show? She did this. She built her business a few years back, right? And so, and she was able to build it up to $1 million business or multi-million dollar business and sell it. And then, so she's been out of the game for a few years, as far as 100% in the game. That's a later question I'm going to ask you if you've gotten back in at all. But so our viewers, listeners are dying to know, can you still do that in today's climate of Airbnb?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. You know, I come across new people all the time just looking to get into this business. And the biggest question is the market saturated? Is there an Airbnb bust, which we've all been talking about? Look, it's definitely doable now. It's just a lot hard. Well, actually, I'm going to say it's a lot harder, but it's a lot easier in the flip side. It's harder because there's a lot of competition out there now. When I first started, I was the only one doing it in my city, and I was able to get 130 properties within a 2.5 year time period because everybody wanted to be involved and have their properties on Airbnb. They just didn't have the time, the skills, or they weren't able to do it themselves. So they were looking for a property manager, and here I was touting my wares with every opportunity. So, of course, I was able to build up a portfolio very quickly. These days, yes, a lot more competition, but on the flip side, a lot more technology, there's a lot of software, and there's a lot of education. So there's coaches like myself or any of the other amazing people that you've had on this show here that are able to really help you fast track and lay that foundation down quickly, get the systems and processes in place, get the paperwork organized that you need. For me, I didn't know what I didn't know back then. Back then, 2016, all that long time ago. But things have changed very quickly since then. So I had to learn the hard way, but I had the opportunity of a lot of the market share. These days, it's flipped. There's a lot of education, a lot of resources out there, but you just have to fight a little bit harder, and you have to be a little bit more savvy when it comes to starting these businesses. You have to differentiate yourself from the competition. What can you do better than maybe other property managers, or what can you offer a homeowner in order to – what's the offer that's too good to say no to? That's what you've really got to think about. But what are your thoughts on this, Steve? I'd love to know your thoughts. We're gonna flip this back to you, you know. Every question you ask me, I'm going to ask.
Yeah, no, it's a Julie George show. So the first thing that jumps out, because you mentioned a lot of stuff there, so and I kind of zoned out, so I didn't speak to it.
You'll have to watch this back.
It's the two sips of wine. I'm gone. So the first thing you mentioned is the technology, so much technology, right? And things that help us, you know, manage a portfolio of Airbnbs. Now what really stood out from your book and in your last appearance on the show is that you ran your whole business from like a notebook, right? Because we asked you what apps you use, what technology. Yeah, I just ran it from a notebook. I was like, oh, we're like, holy crap. And it led to a little bit of argument with me and my partner in my business, Federico, because he has this thing that he loves called Notion, and it has all these tentacles and it runs and every aspect of the business is inside this computer program called Notion, you know, big veiny thing. Anyways, So I told him we're expanding, we're having growing pains, and he was talking about, yeah, you know, but Notion this, and I was like, you know, Julie George ran everything from a little notebook, and he's like, we're not Julie George, and we're like, he's like, he got it. If I ever dog on Notion, he gets back. Oh, I remember bringing hilarious. Up Julie, she did a multi-million-dollar business from a notebook. We're not Julie George. This is different. Okay. So, anyways, that was that's what stood out first. I didn't want to tell that little story. So yeah, there's so much more technology built for people to manage a giant portfolio. You had over 130 properties. That's a lot, you know, of Airbnbs or short-term rentals. We call them short-term rentals now because it's not just Airbnb. And that leads me to the next question I've been wanting to ask, because when you stated in the book and that you solely used Airbnb, that was it, right?
That's actually the secret to not having all the software that everyone talks about now. And, you know, I come back to it. If I was to start again and build up to 130 properties, I probably would do it in the same manner. The only thing different, so folks, if you're listening in right now, I didn't have a PMS. I didn't have a channel manager. I wasn't using anything other than 100% Airbnb, zero for accounting, and then I had a real estate software because I had to be compliant with the real estate laws in Australia. That's it. The one thing that I would do differently now, if I was to do it all over again, I would make sure I use dynamic pricing, because this idiot did not use dynamic pricing. And I often tell the stories, and I sure as hell need Price Labs to sponsor me for saying these stories over and over again. But I calculated by not using dynamic pricing and thinking I knew better than the experts that I lost 10 to 12% overall. Now, I earned over $8 million in that 2.5 year timeframe. 10 to 12% is $1 million that I lost by not using dynamic pricing. So do not do what I did. I would definitely use dynamic pricing again, but I don't know that I'd use a PMS. I'd still probably stick to the Airbnb 100%, and I'm not even sure, and this is going to be very controversial, I'm not even sure I would do a direct booking page.
That's no, it. No.
You heard it here, folks. I think there's a lot of peer pressure these days to do direct bookings.
I'll say that, you know, and there is a lot of pressure, like you mentioned. And we have our direct booking page through Boostly. You know.
Oh, I love Boostly. Boostly. And Mark, I love you if you're listening in. Actually, half of my suitcase coming across to the UK were presents for his kids. But I love him, but I'm not sure that I would do a website.
No. I will argue. I will say, okay, there are more layers to it if you're going to have your own direct booking website. You can't just start up a Stripe page or something and receive money, because the people will do paybacks and they say, I never stayed there, and they'll charge backs. And it's just, it becomes more cumbersome and a little more risky, you know. But now here's the thing. I think it's still, even if you still just want people to, or you want to pick up clients that see you as a professional company, right? That's mm-hmm. going to manage their portfolio. Because now we pick up clients that already have multiple properties, you know, 10, 20, 30 properties. We're picking up clients and we're managing their portfolios. Yeah. So it's not just picking up mom and pop's places anymore. It's people that have been doing it themselves, but kind of want to hand it off to somebody. So when those clients that we pick up, it's to show them our Boostly site, that we have the capabilities of you know, a nice site, not just a, you know, something you made on the fly, but a nice site where people can book and stuff like that. Is, I think that's important if you're a host that wants to grow, just to have it's the face of your company, right? A nice website. Now, if you want to still do most of your business in Airbnb, VRBO, other platforms that you feel safer with, that's fine, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think it's good to have that face of your business, a real living, breathing website, not just a landing page, you know.
You definitely, yeah, I agree with you on that side of things. You definitely do need a website and a shop front for your business. And that's what I had. But I was really, I was very much owner focused. I wasn't guest focused on, because my theory is that as a property manager, my owners are my clients. And that was what I needed to focus on. The guests, the OTAs would take care of. They'll get me the guests, but owners come for me. And so, you know, funny, I would have a lot of, not a lot, I'd have a few guests who would say, I'm going to leave you a bad Google review. Go ahead, because what I was doing is anybody looking on Google for my business were property owners. So I would always respond with, if they said, this woman charged me for a stain on the towel and she's charged me $20. Well, I would say, yes, we did, because you wrecked that towel, and that homeowner's towel is very important to us. By doing that, we were getting more clients, because the homeowners were the ones that were searching for us. But back to your point, absolutely. Everybody needs a shop front and a professional website. And that's probably one of the first things that I would suggest that a new property manager do: invest in a really good website.
Yeah. So yeah, we have our Boostly. And funny, oddly enough, we don't get bookings on there, you know, but we're not pushing it out there. We don't get bookings on there. Clients see that we have a nice website. We had some fraudulent ones come through like a few weeks ago, and we were able to squash those, and we didn't let them book or whatever. But yeah, we do direct. Now here's a caveat. We do a lot of direct bookings to midterm bookings, like travel nurses and traveling professionals, stuff like that. Insurance claims between, you know, people staying for like 3 months, 6 months while their house is getting fixed and stuff like that. So we do direct bookings that way, but like we have them sign a lease, you know, we put a lease in place, and it's more of a long-term, it has to follow like the long-term rental laws, you know? Yeah. So we're comfortable doing those. And a lot of times we're working for the insurance claims, we're working through a company that like ALE or THD or one of the ones that are like, that work with the insurance company. So we're guaranteed our money that way. Travel nurses, you know, I'm saying, they've been great. They've been great so far. They pay their bills and they make a lot of money. So there's no excuse really not to pay their bills, not to pay our rent. So we've had a lot of good luck with them. And so we deal directly that way. As far as the Boostly website, we haven't done bookings through it yet, but it's nice to have. It looks pretty and it works great. Shout out to Mark.
there's a site that I just have recently discovered, Furnish Finders. Have you used them?
Yeah, we've been using Furnish Finders for years. We had the founder on our show a long time ago. And it's a great app, you know, and it was, it's funny because it, like in this industry, especially like you mentioned, when you got in it, no one else was doing it. Right. And so you were able to gobble up all these properties. When we got into short-term rentals, Airbnb, and started, then we dove into Furnish Finders. We were one of the first ones to start utilizing it for Airbnb. It was for nurses to find, you know, work with individual homeowners type deal or whatever. But then Airbnbers all migrated to Furnish Finders. So at first, man, we'd get tons of travel nurses because we were one of the only, you know, options that, and we knew how to cater to them. As far as someone opening up a room in their house, they're not going to make it really nice for a travel nurse, right? It was just an extra room in their house. They're renting out to a travel nurse. But of course, everybody heard about Furnish Finder. And now it's super saturated. It's hard to land bookings there anymore. I mean, we still push very heavily on there, but it's gotten oversaturated too. Mm-hmm. So it's just timing with this industry, and so that's one example.
We've just got to keep evolving, don't we? In this industry, it's really interesting to watch the evolution and the changes, and you've just got to be ready to pivot at any given turn to make sure that we're catering for the right clients, we're getting the right properties, and to be fussy about who we are taking on as homeowners and what property types. You know, I guess we've got to get really clear on that. And to anybody listening in right now, that would be another tip that I would give them is make sure you know who you're serving and then get really clear on what property portfolio you want to have, whether it's luxury or whether it's catering to the travel nurses. And I think that's probably one thing that I see, you know, back in the day, 2016, I was taking anything and everything until I get the reviews back and I find out that I've got all these properties in a crack house. That's not a good look. So be fussy, folks. Make sure you chase the... If I was to do it again, I'd be chasing the big luxury market, the big earners. But you put as much effort into that as you would the studio apartment in the crack house. So let's go for the big stuff.
That makes sense. So if you could give a brief, you know, I know you told it last time on the show, and then people probably heard your story before. You're in the industry, but we get new listeners every day. Maybe they don't. Maybe it's a by miracle they don't know who you are, Julie George.
Surprise, I'm here.
your mug is everywhere. So a brief refresher of how you were able to scale so quickly into like 130 properties.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started back in 2016 as a real estate broker. For those of you who haven't heard the story, it's probably very similar to a lot of the successful entrepreneurs that are out there. Started with my own property, fell in love with the whole Airbnb short-term rental platform, and then decided that if it was working for me, it could work for others. A couple of tips that were very important in helping me scale to 130 properties in 2.5 years. One was having the right vision and actually believing that I could do that. A lot of people hold themselves back or limit themselves with the belief that they cannot, if they can only get to 5, they can leave their day job once they get to 5, they sit back and they relax. Look, I dream pretty big. I wanted to be racing around the world, and here I am in London staying in a short-term rental 3-bedroom mansion in Chelsea for free. Thank you very much to the property managers who put me in here doing a little social media blast for them in exchange. But so I had big ambitions. So firstly, having a really big vision. Secondly, putting a framework in place that was easy to replicate and scale up. Now, I never really wanted to work in the business, so I always had a plan to put a team in place as soon as I possibly could. So at 10 properties, I was able to put Glenn on, who was one of my co-hosts. Now he came on and I said to him, here's 10 properties, you look after them while I go out and find some more. He looked after the guest communications, the cleaning, the laundry. He basically took those 10 properties and he knew if there was a wine glass that was broken in that property, he was the first to be able to report that claim. If there was a scratch on the wall from a suitcase, he knew straight away. So he had this pride and excitement about looking after those properties, being paid a set fee plus a commission, so a profit share. So he had unlimited earnings on those properties, and that was really the key to success. But by putting that in place, I was able to then employ over 18 people in that similar sort of role. And it was like a franchise model. So looking at my business, having all these people build their short-term rental businesses in under my umbrella was the key. Systems, policies, procedures, do my head in. But I tell you what, if you can write it down and get it out of your head down onto black and white, folks, I promise you, if you can create a playbook, you are going to be so much better off. You're going to be able to hand that over to somebody and let them take over the running of your business while you can go and have a vacation yourself. Do not be a slave to your phone, okay, like I was. You need to be able to put that down and walk away, but you need, in order to do that, delegate, 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 and outsource. So I guess those are the operational side of things. The marketing side of things was to be make sure that I was known as the go-to person for short-term rentals and educating my community, creating a like host meetups, putting articles in newspapers and magazines to be able to say, this is short-term rentals. If you want to do it yourself, you can, but otherwise, if you want somebody to manage it professionally, come to this lady here. She'll look after you. So suddenly people are coming and lining up, and three or four properties a week we were inspecting and appraising. So
that's awesome. And that part of it is really inspiring. And what we were talking before the show was like, could you build that same business again with, you know, the way Airbnb is now? Mm-hmm. And I think the important things I draw out of that is that how you're built. Every time you build a business, you build the systems and like you said, get it all out of your head. And that's the hardest part, because I mean, me and Federico, like, well, it'll be something will come up where like, we could take care of it ourselves in 1 minute or 2 minutes, but I'm like, no, we gotta teach the VA to do this, right? Or our workers are mostly VAs, and we gotta get this down where they know how to, it's a 2 minutes here, 2 minutes here, 2 minutes here. But that derails you. It adds up and it derails you from actually building your, you know, growing your business. And so, exactly. So that part of it, what I really love about how you built your business was, you know, you had your systems, and plus you partnered with people that you knew that were really good at what they did.
I like to call myself the matchmaker between the homeowners who really want a piece of the short-term rental pie and the budding entrepreneurs who just need a business opportunity. So changing the narrative of when I was going out looking for team members, I wasn't going offering jobs, I was offering a business opportunity. And I was saying to Glenn, the first person, I said, let's partner up. Let's do this together. Let me teach you how to do short-term rentals. Now, I didn't teach him everything because he would have run off and maybe started his own business. Actually, I did have one lady do that to me. And anyway.
Never heard from her again.
You know what? So I can tell this story quickly because we're amongst friends. So she tried to go off and start in competition to me because she saw the potential. She set up business cards. She set her website up. She did everything else except for register her business. So I found that out, and guess who registered the business name that she was trading under? So she couldn't run a business anymore. Anyway, she now lives in Dubai or somewhere like that. She's out. But
don't mess with Julie George.
Sorry, I don't want to tell you that. But it's what you want to do is when you're looking for people to come on board with you, and the folks, that was a very rare occasion. That doesn't happen. Most people want to build a business, but they don't maybe have the skills or the set of balls, and I'm going to put it out there, that you might need to do what you and I are doing, Steve. Like this, it's pretty full on, and, you know, we're taking a risk. We're, you know, our families are probably thinking, what the hell are you guys doing? It can be pretty scary stuff. But what I see, one of the biggest challenges that property managers have is that CEO mindset. You've got to delegate. You've got to trust and delegate to others. And as you said, all those little tasks, answering emails, answering phone calls, it could possibly be done by a VA or somebody else in your team. You should be working on your business and looking at the overall, you know, rather than doing the day-to-day running and looking at the tasks that you are doing, a self-assessment, put a dollar value on those tasks, and anything less than a few hundred dollars an hour, that should be passed off to somebody else.
Mm. I like that. Anything under $1,000 an hour, maybe.
There we go. How much is your time worth? But yeah, but yeah, I think it's really important to do stuff like that. Now, I've got to say my favorite memory of my business, and I knew that I had made it, was when I turned up to my office and the girls in the office would say, "Stop, what are you doing here? Don't touch anything." Because they knew my business better than I knew my business. And I was working 10 hours a week when I had 130 properties. I hadn't seen a lot of the properties, but they were still Julie's properties. So, folks, if you can get to that, I promise it's a pretty good lifestyle.
Mm, I love that. And here's the thing too, because you and I look at things differently. I think, you know, we're entrepreneurs, right? Yeah. And which is most people. I mean, people listen to this show. Yes, yeah, I believe that they feel that they're entrepreneurs, and I know there are a lot of them are going to do big things. But so many people's mindset, like you're saying, you were doing all this, you know, busting your hump, and family's like, "Why are you doing all that?" You know, I get that too. Every entrepreneur probably gets that from the family. Really, you're going to do that? What do you mean you're going to retire at 45? Well, that doesn't even make sense. He goes, "Well, when are you going to retire?" Oh, hopefully 60. Oh, hopefully 65. I go, "Why 65? Well, that's when you're supposed to retire." I'm like,
"Yes."
So this from 45 to 65 is the best years of your life. I mean, I think, you know, it's going to be some great years where you can still walk and get around and have fun and go all over the world. Why do you want to be tied down and then just enjoy the last, you know, part of your life where you can barely get around? I don't know. So you're living the dream. You're a shining example for all of us. You keep asking me, "When are you going to retire?" I'm terrified too. Why? Because I've just been, you know, programmed all my life. You have to work until you're 65, but I can make the leap now. I'm putting everything in place. My birthday.
Are you going to put it out there, the date?
September 28th is my birthday. And that's, you know, I'm going to be out by September 28th, if not sooner. So yeah.
Does your boss watch this show?
I don't know. I don't give a shit. I know that there's people at my work that do watch the show, and they know me as the Airbnb guy. And, you know, and it's kind of fun because I of all the people that have asked me, and have, you know, I've given so much advice to, even though I know it's probably fallen on a lot of deaf ears. I don't mind. You love talking short-term rentals.
Yeah.
So if a tree asked me a question, I'd go off on the tree for an hour about short-term rentals. And even though it's probably just my own mind asking me, but a friend of mine, shout out to Shannon. This is the second shout out I give him on the show. He actually asked me months and months all these questions. And he finally bought his first home that he was going to do short-term rentals in Shreveport, Louisiana. And he's so excited about it. And he did a great job. He made it beautiful. He's kicking some butt with it. So it's inspiring. Just one person, you know,
that's so cool. Shannon, congratulations. Honestly, the first one is the hardest. So Shannon, kudos to you, buddy, for actually making the leap.
Yeah. He knows you because he watches all that. He's all over the YouTubes now. He watches all the videos. So he knows Julie George, the million-dollar host. So yeah, I don't know that I rambled. It must be the wine talking, but just to see that you actually, you know, put your heart and soul into a business and was able to make it turn into a multi-million-dollar business.
Yeah.
And then you didn't try to do it all yourself. You relied on partners to help you to
right away. As soon as I was able to afford it, I put somebody on to help me. And I think that's the secret. But then, you know, then I was lucky enough to really package it up and sell just before COVID. I kind of feel like I've always been just one step ahead, maybe, of what's going on. I joke that I can see the future, and I often can when I'm based in Australia and I am a few days ahead, but I'm in England now, so I'm way behind. But I, you know, now I get to help others, and I really get joy out of seeing other people's success stories and just seeing them being able to scale up their businesses. And, you know, I've coached some of the biggest names in the industry, the Rachel Gainsboroughs, the Kyle Stanleys, you know, there's people that all over that I can see now that are just doing super things and following some of that advice that I'm giving. So folks, if you're out there and you're listening and you want to coach, get in touch. Sorry, I just plugged.
Yeah, you're a good plugger. I don't know what that means. So I wish you were drinking wine. It'd be a lot more.
I know. I'll just pretend. Can that be the shot, the photo shot that we put on? Yeah.
No, let's pour some on this and see what happens.
Don't you wreck that book. Your daughters are going to read it, Steve.
Shout out. Yeah, my wife and daughters say hi. They love Julie, Auntie Julie. And it's funny because my wife will be scrolling on Facebook with Lucy, you know, my 5-year-old, yeah, right beside her. And Lucy, and we'll see your face. Oh, is that Auntie Julie? Yeah. Aww. Yeah. Where is she, in Australia? Because she's all over the place. Let's see where she is now. And it's like,
Julie's on the run.
Find Julie, like find Waldo.
Find, like, where's Wally? Yeah, where's Julie? Because I was in Scotland last week and England this week. I'll be in Singapore next week and Australia, and then coming to Mexico in August. And then Colombia I've been invited to go to. So, folks, if you're listening in right now, I guess dreams do come true. And Steve was saying it before, you know, if we can allow ourselves to think that we can retire at an early age and travel around, that's exactly what I'm doing now. And, man, I pinch myself every day, though. I tell you what, I'm so grateful for this life that I've created. But anybody can do it. I did it. Anybody who's listening in now, I just hope that they might take a bit of inspiration and consider putting some hard work in and dream really big, and you too can be living your dream.
Mm. One thing, because what sticks out the most is you knew you couldn't do it yourself. You started offloading as much of it as possible early on. And so a lot of people are afraid, though. They're like, well, this person can't do it as good as I can. You know, how do you get over those fears?
That's really tough. It's really hard to start trusting people that they can do it. I think it's just, you're just going to have to let go of that fear, and just try it. You know, what's the worst that's going to happen? If somebody can't do it as good as you, you can get rid of them. But imagine for a second if they can do it just as well as you or even better. Mm. And for me, it was cleaning. I am not a good cleaner. Like, I suck. And I just haven't got the patience or the eye, you know, the detail. So I knew that I needed help with that. It changed my life. Once I could put people into those co-host roles, the partnering roles where they could go and clean for me, game changer. I knew that I was really good at marketing, promotions, finding new properties. That was my skill set. I just had to really recognize what I was good at, what I was bad at, what gave me energy, what drains me of energy. Put a dollar value on those tasks as well, and then realize what it is that I can outsource. For me, getting clear on that, but then it's being brave enough to take that leap and say, all right, I'm going to put this responsibility to Glenn or to young Abby or young Lucy, and one day you will, the 3- and 5-year-olds, they will be working for Dad, and you might just say, all right, here's your role, here's the set of keys, and off you go. And you've just got to trust that they can do it. And sometimes it won't work, but most of the time it will, and you'll be pleasantly surprised. You know, I often would get stuck when it came to employing people on a salary as well. That always stressed me out, being responsible for somebody's salary and knowing that if things went bad with the business, I would still have to pay them. I didn't put on my first employee until I had 50 properties. But when I did, my business flourished. Every time I invested in somebody like that, we just got more and more properties and more income, because suddenly I was able to concentrate on the bigger picture rather than the day-to-day detail.
Mm. And how do you find great employees?
Okay. So my best tip is to poach them. Find somebody who, and this is really naughty, but I think when you've got to just keep your eyes and ears open at all times. You may be in a restaurant and a server may just blow you over. If they've got incredible customer service, they've got an eye for detail, they know when to fill up your wine and glass, whatever it might be, have a conversation with that person. find out what their ambitions are. Do they want to maybe start their own business? Do they want to change their employment? But I often would find the person before I had a role available, and then I would create a role for them, or I would keep them in mind and then have them come into the business. So it was, that was probably my favorite thing, was to find the person first and then create the role second. What about you, Steve? Have you any tips on that?
That's my favorite part of the show so far, what you just said right there. Not poaching,
But find the right person.
Talking to people. Yeah. Find out. Now here's what it automatically makes me think of. And every time you say something, it makes me think of a story, right? And so we've been through a lot of virtual assistants. I'll just say it. You know, we've been through a lot. They start out, they seem great. You know, they do a pretty good job. And I don't know, I think a lot of them are working multiple jobs and they start, you know, straying away and not doing as good of a job. It just seems like a pattern, right? And then we're on to the next one. And so Federico, I keep bringing up my partner, Argist Reynolds, Argist, as you say it. Argist is the largest. A plug. So he was telling me the other day, he was so excited, right? That a friend, he put it like a posting on, I guess, he decided to put a posting on Facebook and Instagram, stuff like that. Not just go to where the VAs are. I'm just going to put a posting, see if anybody's interested in doing this type of work, you know, helping us with the management company. And instantly, ex-coworker of his from the airline we both, you know, worked at, reached out to him, said, hey, you're hiring for some position, you know. I don't know a lot about short-term rentals, but I do know this, and he knew who it was right away. He said he worked with her for years and she was one of the employees that's a rock star. Like, she was just, you give her any task and she just crushes it, you know, and someone you didn't have to worry about. They did their job amazingly. He said, she's just one of those rare, you know, unicorn rock stars that I worked with, and she's interested in this. And I'm like, and he was so over the moon. He's like, She wants to work with us. And I'm going to find her things that she can do. She knows, I mean, she knows airline pricing. She knows customer service. She knows all this. And I think it'll translate well, but above all, he knows that she's just this amazing employee. Right. And so he's, like you said, you find the person and then the role,
and create the role,
and then create the role. So I was like, that is so freaking cool.
I think also too, one of the biggest things that holds people back is to find enough tasks to keep somebody busy. But if you can find someone like that lady who you were just talking about, who can maybe create, like, she might be able to think outside the box and create her own tasks, or be able to start putting this playbook together, the systems, policies, procedures. I'm actually about to hire a personal assistant. Finally, it's time to come back and take somebody on, but it's somebody that I once had as an executive assistant for me. So I know that she's really amazing. Actually, I'm putting it out there and I haven't actually signed off on a contract yet. So she's probably going to hold me to it now, but I know that lady will not only be, I don't need to babysit her. And that's probably the best thing, is that she will be able to be autonomous. She will be able to look for things to do to better the business. And one of the policies I always stood by was, if somebody came to me in my business and said, Julie, I've got this great business idea, and it may be offering transfers and pickups from the airport, or it might be to put mini bars into the short-term rentals. If they're willing to put the time in and to get that side of the business set up, I'll go 50-50 with them. I'll put up the upfront costs if I think it's a good idea, a little bit like Shark Tank. They run it. But then we go 50-50 in that business idea. Mm. And something I would always say is, no matter what the employee or the person is who's working with you does, give them a piece of the pie. Give them some sort of an incentive. They cannot just work an hourly rate. You've got to incentivize them and have them working as your sales team as well. So every time they bring a property to you, give them a kickback, but also incentivize their workload.
Hmm. That's so cool. And I bring it back to my company. We're talking about our companies, our businesses. That's what we do. So that automatically makes me think, because Federico's running the operations side, doing mostly the short, you know, short-term rental side, Airbnb stuff, you know, and I'm doing the corporate longer stays side of the business, you know, getting us the travel nurses, corporate rentals, stuff like that. So how do I put this? So my employee, I guess my assistant is actually Federico's brother. He's been doing stuff for us for a while now. Mm-hmm. And now, so I told him, hey, can I take your brother on my team full time? And so I'm going to teach him how to do all this stuff. And he's doing amazing. He's got some really, really good, really, really amazing skills. But what I told him, I was like, you know, it's technically, you know, you have your shift, but you can, as I said, anything you put over that, I mean, if you land us any bookings at all at any time of day, I'm going to give you part of that booking, you know? And so that gives him an incentive. Hey, he might be after hours or whatever it might be, but a message comes in from Furnish Finder or a corporate client, whatever, he's going to respond to it, try to close that deal because that means money for him. Exactly. So you can't just cap what they're going to make. I mean, it's just human nature. Okay, I clock out. I'm not even thinking about my job anymore. You know what I'm saying? So yeah.
I have people like that. Yeah. Incentives. Yeah, you want to empower them. You want to empower your team and then create that loyalty, but have them driven and just excited about your business. And I think it's really important to make them feel like they're part of the team. They're not just doing one set task with their blinkers on, that they're part of the overall picture. And so celebrate the successes. You know, if you've had a big month, talk about it with your team members, take them out for dinner. But I like what you're doing with Federico's brother. That sounds awesome. So it's exciting. It's exciting watching your success story, Steve. Like, honestly, and every time I talk to you, it's like, are you retired yet? Are you out of your job? But now you've put it out there. So, hey.
It's out there. It's there. It's there. It's there. And all because of you, Julie, you inspired me.
Oh, it's not because of me, but I'll take it. And folks, you're here to hear first, but no, it's not. And that's where I just love seeing the hard work and paying off as well. So, you know, your family will benefit so much. Once you're out of your day job and you're concentrating 100% on the business, you're going to be able to have that flexibility to go to the girls' school plays or whatever it might be, and you're not going to be tied down. You're not answering to anybody. You know, there's no way. I often talk about, you know, employees often worry about losing their job. Entrepreneurs always worry about having to get a job. So let's make sure that we all stay entrepreneurial.
And one of the biggest bonuses, I get to day drink.
Yes, you do. That's...
You're leaving me high and dry there, Julie. Come on.
Does Micah allow you to day drink, or is it just, you know, when you bring me on to be on the show?
Funny enough, most of our podcasts we record Friday nights. And so
that's dangerous.
Yeah, you can't tell someone not to drink on a Friday night. Come on now.
The first episode I ever recorded with you, I think I still remember it as being one of my all-time favorites podcast interviews. And that's probably why. Now I find out that both of you were drunk.
We were knackered. I'm just kidding. Knackered. No, I drink tea during the podcast. Ew. But yeah. So I have my cup of tea. Lovely.
What can go in the teacup, though?
That's a mystery right there. Crazy Julie George, everybody. Man, I got a ton of, I didn't even get to any of my questions.
I knew this would happen. If you're listening in right now, Steve and I are buddies. You know,
we've
caught up a few times now, and it's just so cool. It's the only industry I've ever been involved in where we all should be in competition with each other, but we're not. It's all collaborative. We all share. We all lift each other up, support each other, and it genuinely is super exciting to catch up with you and find out how your business is going and celebrate each other's successes.
What's funny, and we'll get into the you sold your business, now what, you know, that there must have been an awkward stage, but we'll get to that. But I know one thing you did, you did a few things, but one thing, you teamed up with a group that you were kind of doing a mentorship type course deal. I don't know. Anyways, it didn't last very long.
Coaching.
But yeah. But and then I just remember the way they set it up, you know, okay, you have oh, with this package, you get a certain amount of time with this person, you know, the more you spend, the more money you get to talk to the mentor or whatever. And I was like, fuck that. I'm going to call Julie Jordan when I want to call Julie Jordan. That's my buddy. I ain't going to pay $10,000 and not speak to him only like 1 minute a month. No, I don't know. I just thought that was funny. So I didn't stop calling you.
Well, you're allowed to, but anyone listening in on this podcast is still going to pay the $10,000. I'm only joking, but that is how, that's how I'm making my money these days. So group coaching was something I did for about 18 months. But I've moved to one-on-one coaching now because what I discovered was there's no one size fits all solution. So all of our businesses are so different. We're all in different areas. We're all in different structures. So what I prefer to do now is get on with like you and say to you, okay, tell me about your biggest challenge. Let's find out where you're stuck in your business. What do you, what can I help you with? And really dive in as if I'm one of your team members. So I'm only working with 5 or 6 people at a time at the moment, and I bloody love it. You know, I get to see faster results. I get to feel like I'm part of that team. But of course, someone said to me the other day, "You only get asked to do podcast interviews, so those people don't have to pay the consulting fee."
Yep, that's it.
So this is your consulting hour.
I'm gonna call you every day. Let's do a podcast again, Julie. Come on.
Yeah.
I've got a big problem I need to work out.
God. Oh, you're a worry.
Yeah. So just jumping around the questions. I guess that brings me to another one. So I know you've taught like entry level, you know, short term rental people to experts to everything in between. What are some of the biggest problems that that people trying to build a successful short-term rental business come across?
Face. Yeah. What do they face? Is that what you're going to ask?
Yeah. That's what it
is. Yeah. So my favorite people to work with are probably ones that have got to maybe 10 properties and they're doing everything themselves and they just can't get out of their own way. And they're the ones that we were saying, you know, that might feel like they can't delegate because they're worried about people not being able to do the job as well as them, or they might feel like they can't afford it, but they're still trying to do everything themselves. So if I can come in and firstly, straight away I've got to work on that mindset and go, do you think that you deserve it? And what is your vision? Where are you? Where do you see yourself with your business? What is your exit plan? Do you have an exit plan? Do you want to stay in this business for a long term or prepare it to sell? Because that's something that a lot of people are considering at the moment. There's a lot of activity in that market. But it really comes down to getting the vision right, getting their dreams, knowing what the goals are so that we can then roadmap to those goals. So that's probably one of the biggest challenges. Second one would be people. The people in the team and how to structure that team, that organisational chart, but also who to hire, how to hire, contracts that are needed, and incentives that they can offer. So that's the other one. And then, of course, the policies, procedures, and the systems. So all the boring stuff, as I say. But you need to get that. Honestly, so many of us have built these businesses. But if we weren't here tomorrow, how is someone going to pick up and take over that role? And, you know, so you've almost got to prepare to sell by putting everything on paper, even if you're not going to sell, is probably my advice. So, but those are the major challenges that I see out there.
Mm. And as far as, like you mentioned, getting those systems, you know, it's the boring stuff, but oh my God, it's so important. And it made me think of like when I started, like, you know, I work a lot less days and hours, you know, a couple of days a week at the real job, you know, it's a flexible job. I can switch shifts and all that stuff. So I take off a lot of days, but when I first started doing that and I have like a whole day, okay, I got a whole day just to focus on my business, right? What am I going to do? Okay. This thing that I keep doing, let's just say, for example, reaching out to Furnish Finders, travel nurses, just something simple like that. That takes me, you know, a few minutes for each nurse or each person on that site to reach out and have a back and forth conversation. And so I'm going to get this all out of my head and I'm going to teach my virtual assistant to do this. Oh my God. I was something so simple. It took me like 3 or 4 hours trying to write the systems and build the code for someone could step in and do it. And it was frustrating as hell. You're working through the muck. It's muck because then the VA will ask you, oh, but what if they ask this? And what do you, oh, fuck, I got to go back and let me. And it's time consuming as hell. But once they get it down, I mean, they can
game changer.
A game changer. I do whatever I want to hang out with my family. And they've reached out to 100 tribal nurses that day. Here's all the responses. Here's its feedback. Here's the, you know, boom, 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 boom. Here's the lead. Here's the hot leads. Here's holy shit. I know it took freaking day for one stupid little task. But once you get that out of your head, onto paper, you know, and all the variables that could happen in that situation, then it's gone. And it's just totally worth it.
And now you get the VAs to start writing out those systems. But folks, if you're listening in, if you're doing a task more than two or three times a week, do exactly what Steve did. Schedule some time to actually either write it down or record a Loom. Recording Looms are a really good way to do it as well, because you can show your screen. But you just need to be able to take that time where it feels pointless, like you're busting your ass for 3 or 4 hours to write it down, and you feel unproductive because you're not bringing in any money. But in the long term, it's like writing a book. You write it once, you never have to, it's out there forever then. So, Steve, I'm really happy to hear that you've done that, because you can see the value out of what that's brought in. So are you going to do some more of that?
I've made a lot of Looms. I love Loom, by the way. We're not sponsored by them, but shout out to Loom. Here's the thing. If you're out there, you don't know what Loom is, first of all, go to loom.com and check it out. It's cool. You can make these instructional videos and stuff like that. If you're not someone that's good at writing out things, it's a heaven sent, which I'm not the best at either. I guess I'm all right at talking. I've been doing enough of these podcasts and getting knackered with Julie. But what's cool about Loom, you know, you always send me on a tangent, is, okay, you can make the video, you go through it, it shows your computer screen, you go, this is exactly how I do it, boom, 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 boom. But afterwards, I was not, don't just make a video and put it out there, because, some people are visual learners, some people aren't. Underneath it, there's like where you can put comments, right? You can write out the whole freaking 10,000 word script underneath that, step by step, how to do it, not just showing the visual. But you have the step-by-step as well. And if they have a question, I say, well, look underneath. There's all the comments. And there's, if this happens, this happens. So it's all in the video and written down too for them. So it's a cool thing. I love Loom. It's helped me a lot.
Love it. Good. Whatever works for you folks, but you just got to get it out of your head, down on paper or recorded.
So. Recorded. Have you completely jumped out of management?
No, I'm addicted to it, right? So here's the thing. So I've only got one at the moment, but I really wanted to keep at least one property active so that I could stay relevant and stay in the game. So I've got one that I arbitrage, which will come to a surprise of most people who ever heard me on Clubhouse or on podcasts where I've always said arbitrage is not my thing. Well, it is my thing when the numbers add up. So I rent this property for about $2,200 a month, but it brings in about $8,000. So I was like, okay, I'll stay with that. Mind you, it's very difficult to, I've got my son managing it for me while I'm over in London, and I can't get hold of my child. So if your child is going to work for you, be prepared to fire your child, because that's exactly what's about to happen when I get back to Australia. So Joshua, if you're watching this, you're fired. it's not the first time I've had to fire him. It's not going to probably be the last, but only one property, and that's really just to stay in the loop. And this time I'm using dynamic pricing.
Nice. I think I saw that property. It was at Oceanfront.
No, it's jungle. It's kind of on the water. Like it's got a lagoon, a beachfront lagoon, but it's a zebra print. It's called Wild Lux. It's exactly what the Suarez family needs when they come to Australia. It's down the road from Bluey's house in Brisbane. And I know, the girls will love it. So, and down the, just a few miles away are all the kangaroos and koalas for you to cuddle in.
Oh, my God.
Get down to Australia.
They'll be in heaven. I will sacrifice and hop on a 10-hour, 20-hour, whatever the plane ride is over to Australia with my crazy 3-year-old. Oh my God!
Yeah.
I might have her chug some NyQuil, or who knows. I didn't say that. Yeah.
No, it's recorded now. You know that,
it's
right?
It's recorded. It's on the internet. What could go wrong? The art of, you know, that was another question of mine. The art of, I'm sure you've had to fire people in your day.
That's hard. That's really hard. And that's something that I consult on as well, because that's, you know, people find it really tricky to let go. But my theory is hire slow, fire fast.
Hello, hello.
So you've just got to get rid of people. They're not performing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, cut out for a second.
Find somebody who will look after you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so you said hire slow, fire fast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, because it cut out for a minute. And we'll have Claire Hook, I won't say her last name, but she's my favorite that. And she's our editor, so I'll have her edit that. Yeah, Claire's the best.
Claire from HFM. But yes, hire slow, fire fast. Make sure that if somebody is giving you a headache, because that was the biggest issue for me, is dealing with people in the team. And, you know, it wasn't the guests, it wasn't the property owners, it was the staff. And gosh, I'm recording this too, right? So all my former staff members are probably pointing fingers at each other right now. But, you've just got to make sure you've got the right team under you that's supporting you and pushing you in the right direction.
That's good advice right there. Another big thing, but this is your life now. This is your life now. And you are a mentor. You travel the world and you speak at conferences, which is cool. Mm. Amazing. And then you, and you mentor people. So for example, someone like me, okay, here's the big thing that sticks out: imposter syndrome. So have you ever experienced that? Because I'm like, I know a bunch of stuff. People ask me questions. I know a bunch of stuff about short-term rentals, about short-term, midterm, all that stuff. And I love sharing with people. But as soon as they bring up, can you mentor me? I'm like, I don't know. Am I qualified for that? You know, how did you change your mindset?
Imposter syndrome is so real. And it was something that we've just spoken about with the other authors of Hospitable Hosts. So we've just had our second book released. We've got Netflix who have picked us up and are very excited. Now, you're going to be in the next book, Mister.
Yes.
We're recording that as well. But we were just talking about imposter syndrome and how you don't feel worthy of being able to give advice or guidance or be able to stand up on stage and talk about these things. You have to fake it till you make it. I promise you, it's just as simple as that. You've just got to smile. You know, a lot of the times people are looking for mentorship or advice. What they're really looking for is just reassurance, guidance, and just somebody to talk to. And, you know, it's, but imposter syndrome, I promise you that if you have just, you know, we were talking about in Nashville at the big conference, that we want people to stop apologizing for having only one property. Mm. Well, don't apologize. Celebrate the fact that you've got a property. You're in short-term rentals. You actually are living the dream already. If you've got one property, holy crap, that's way more than the wider population. So just take a second to step back, smell the roses, realize how much you have achieved, and realize that you actually do know what you're doing. You know, you look at where you are and believe in yourself. But yeah, sometimes you need an uppercut to remember that that you are worthy.
That you started.
I'll give you an uppercut.
Thank you. Ooh. Thank you. And you won't fake it. So that's the thing. Even if you do the one, you know, okay, here's an analogy I heard was pretty cool. You know, karate, right? You don't know karate. Maybe you do know karate. Yeah, you did. You said.
Mr. Miyagi.
I heard somewhere else, might've been another podcast. I'm a podcast junkie, but someone walked into a karate studio, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, so we're going to start you out. Okay. You're going to have a white belt. And he goes, okay, you know. He goes, and congratulations, this is the hardest belt to get. He's like, what are you talking about? It's the first belt. And it's like, no, because 99% of the people won't even walk into the studio to get the white belt, you know? Everybody thinks they got to be a black belt right away. No, no, you start off with the white belt, and most people don't even start off. Most people don't even get the first property. Most people been talking about getting into real estate for years, don't even buy the first house, you know? And so the fact that you've got one property, do not be ashamed of that, you know? You're already ahead of 99% of the people on the planet because you made that first step.
Exactly. So celebrate it and just be proud. And you know, one thing I would love people to do is stop apologizing, you know, in advance and saying, I'm sorry, but I've only got one property. No, no, no. I want you to be shouting it from the rooftops and go, guess what? I've got a property. And, you know, just celebrate the fact that you're well on your way to financial freedom and you're changing your life. If you can get that first property, the second one will come, the third one will come. However many you want will come, but that first one is the hardest.
Mm. Me and Julia George are some motivational mofos, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
We should take this act on the road, Julie.
Move over, Oprah.
Wow, yeah, that's we're at an hour and we've covered a lot of stuff. And I appreciate your time, Julie. I know you didn't have to get all dolled up for our show. What are you doing? All looking all, you know.
Well, I'm going to the Ivy. I'm going to the fanciest restaurant in town in London. You know, you never know. I might run into David Beckham or like some superstar or something. I don't know.
You mean you got dolled up for Live Let Thrive? That's what you meant. That's what.
That's what I meant.
You can skip the Ivy. You can just stay on here.
Funny.
That's pretty cool. That's you live a charmed life. And you don't pay for any of it. Everybody pays for
you.
No. How the fuck did you do that?
Exactly. So, you know, sell the business, write a best-selling book or three, and get on stages all around the world where people pay you to come and fly first class. I flew first class from Australia here. The first class cabin was so big. I had two seats. I could invite somebody in for dinner. My chair was a massage chair. My biggest complaint was to look out the window. I had to get up from my chair and walk two steps across to look out the window. Like, holy shit. That's when I was like, I was so excited and I'm so grateful for this life.
Now, I will say those two steps while getting all those free drinks on the plane, on a moving plane, is a little trickier than you would think.
The balance was happening. But Steve, I tell you, so it was 25 hours or something. It was flying time. But I tell you, in first class, when you've got all those luxuries, I'm ready to... Yeah, I'm ready to do that again. But yeah, I'm a lucky girl. I say lucky, but I think there was a greater plan. There was a lot of hard work and now I'm reaping the benefits and I am just freaking loving life at the moment. So, but folks, honestly, if I can do it, you can do it. Steve, I know you've got a copy of my book there. What I'd love to do is, can you hold it up? If anybody is listening in, you've been inspired by anything we said today, please, if you want to shoot me a message and let me know that you've listened in to Live, Let, Thrive, you've heard this interview, the first 10 people, I'm going to email a copy of that book to.
Nice. And, yeah. And she fights alligators in the book, so it's a good book.
Crocodiles.
Oh, crocs.
Come on. First job ever was feeding crocodiles. But folks, get in touch with me and let me know that you've listened into the two of us having glasses of wine and shooting the breeze.
Shooting the shit.
Yeah, I was going to say that. And I'm like, don't swear on your show, but you said me I can.
Next time you better be drunk, okay? You better be drunk.
Yeah, then you'll have a good show, won't you? Yeah,
she was putting little koala bears on everybody at the last party, the one in Dallas. She was all over the place. It was fun. Cool. Where can people find you, Julie?
Yeah, so jump on my website, milliondollarhost.com.au, Instagram at milliondollarhost, and on Facebook, LinkedIn, TikTok. I'm everywhere. So, but please don't be shy. Please make contact. I would love to see if I can help. And I'm offering 15-minute free Zooms. So if anybody's interested in just having a chat like Steve and I are today, get in touch. I want to find out about what you're doing out there and see if there's any guidance I can offer.
Sweet. Thank you so much for hopping on again, Julie. Repeat guest, bye. Julie George, everybody. Yay. Now go have fun at your fancy hoity-toity restaurant.
And thanks to Micah for being away. Micah, go away again sometime.
He'll be back. Don't worry. He'll be back.
We love him. We love him.
Bye, Julie.
Bye.
And you can find Live Let Thrive, of course, at liveletthrive@gmail.com and all that stuff. liveletthrive.com. Julie's signing off over there. We'll see y'all soon on the flip side, episode 251. Peace.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Live Let Thrive. Be sure to tune in next week for all the latest in the world of Airbnb and all that entails. Bye-bye.